Hello, this is David or Davy or somebody else from Eke Schnock. You're listening to Vulnerable Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, your shenanigans are cool and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Right, hello out there.
How you doing? How you doing? This is Scott, and that is Mike, and we are...
No, I'm over here, Scott. Don't point over there. That was stupid.
Yeah.
Well... And you just looked so weird for our podcast right off the bat. I'm a little ashamed of you.
I look weird every week. However, I don't always wear my goalie helmet like you.
Well, I mean... I come prepared. You never know when an impromptu hockey game is just going to bust through your door. So
now, is it
that's why I'm always ready.
Is it a safety thing or a fashion thing, the reason you're wearing the goalie helmet tonight?
Why can't it be both? I mean, come on now. I mean, I can go down the catwalk and make an incredible save at the five hole.
At the five hole?
Yeah.
So
they shoot at the five hole.
So you make a save at the five hole, which is between your legs.
Well, I'm gonna block it.
All right. Well, it's amazing you could talk so clear with that mask on. It's. You sound like a cat now suddenly.
Well, I mean that's what you do when you wear a hockey mask. I mean that's how you intimidate the opponents. I mean, didn't you see that scene in Mighty Ducks where Goldberg saw the Icelandic team coming up to him and he just went. And they just all scattered.
So, in your idea, in your mind, something very intimidating would be a man in a goalie mask meowing. That's what would get you shook.
Would you walk up to a man in a goalie mask meowing?
Fair point. Fair point. Especially not
what
like in
Burloo.
Not in like public. Like not like a food store.
Well, that's where you go to your local Wegmans and then you put on your hockey mask and you meow. I don't know what's wrong with you, Scott. Don't you know your Georgian history?
I like that our podcast over the years has had plenty of dogs barking in the background, usually Obi. It now has incorporated your cat, loves to seem to meow. Every once in a while, I'll be like, what was that sound? And then I'd see, like, his tail. Well, not his tail. It doesn't have one. His like, whiskers or face kind of pop up in the bottom of your screen just a little bit. And then even on one of our interviews that we never aired, we had endless birds chirping in the background. In fact, that was one of the reasons we did not air the interview, because she was so distracted by all the birds.
I mean, that's why we are PETA's number one podcast. I mean,
are we?
I think we confirmed that. I'm pretty sure. I mean, I would just put it on T-shirts and say certified true. Before we confirm.
So I shouldn't air the episode where we did all those tests on rats?
I mean, they were delicious, so they might appreciate that episode.
Well, guys, welcome to the show. I'm Scott there. That's Mike in the sweet south. He's in the sweet south in Georgia. I'm in Jersey. And each week, every Monday, been going pretty strong. Haven't missed a week in a while. We released an episode of Verbal Shenanigans where today you're joining us for episode 253, climbing our way up. Last week was a very special episode. We had the one and only Victor Wooten, arguably the world's greatest bass player, on the show. He returned for the second time. So really, really cool experience. Well, really cool to add. We have a good arsenal of guests who've been on twice. Victor Wooten and true. Doug Max would both be
Aaron is.
Yep.
I mean, I consider Doug Max in the realm of those two other gentlemen.
Sharon Alexander,
yep.
There's a few. But
look them up, people.
Yeah. So each week we kind of
tell us every two-time guest and win a T-shirt.
Each week, yeah, please do that. I got these T-shirts I need to get rid of, so please look them up. You could even just make one up. I'll just say you're right. Send a t-shirt your way. So each week we do interview someone interesting, and this week is no different, and we'll get to that in a few. But I guess, Berlo, how was your 4th of July?
Very tiring. Very tiring.
Very tiring.
The parents move out of their house.
You're not supposed to do that on the 4th.
Well, we did it on the... We did a couple boxes on the 4th before the barbecue, and we did it on the 5th and 6th. And needless to say, Mother Nature was hammering us hard that both them days as we were 94 and 96 down here. So it was reminding us that we really should have created a business and had enough money to pay for the movers.
Or convince your parents to stay until nicer weather.
Yeah, yeah. I was somewhat halfway through thinking, all right, if I just put a bunch of boards up at each door and just lock them in, then I wanted to worry. I mean, maybe they'll call me something about they need food and water, but I mean, I think they'll figure it out. My dad's pretty smart.
It's a fact. Burlos don't need food or water. They're able to. They're self-sufficient.
I'm pretty sure my dad can make up some nice water down somewhere.
So you can just whip up water in a boarded up house.
Well, there's oxygen in the house, so you just got to find some hydrogen, two parts.
So you're going on the assumption that your dad, if locked up, could be able to harness water from the sky.
I mean, he's a pretty handy man. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him.
We might need to call him.
Well, he'll listen to the episode. He might answer that question for me off the air. So,
well, Mr. Berlo, if you are listening, and you also happen to have a camera nearby, please show us how to harness water from the air and prove your son, prove the faith that your son has in you. I don't really tend to think that you can do it, but you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm sure my pops will do me proud. So.
I hope you get some like old invention video, like a Rube Goldberg machine, like all the things moving, like the balls dropping to like a swinging line and knocks over the other thing.
A bunch of lights going off, a match lights, and it burns a chicken that pecks a piece of wood.
Right, a big boot at the end. Yeah.
And at the end, it just pours a glass of water from a bottle.
At the end, it's just your dad at the end of like a... Like a little slide in his mouth, just like one little drop onto his tongue. I could see him. I could see him. I would be impressed. Yeah, the 4th was my wife and I actually, I would say starting Tuesday night, went on like a 4-day like a drinking fest. And my wife barely drank. I guess it was kind of a bender. So Tuesday night we were like post volleyball. Been playing a little volleyball league, and now all the team went out afterwards, and I probably had nothing crazy, probably had four or five drinks, which is, you know, that's a buzz, you know, that's not gonna, shouldn't be devastating. However, next morning I wake up completely just devastated until about 2 o'clock in the afternoon from like five drinks.
We just talking five beers. Some mixing?
Five beers. That's it.
And nothing out of the ordinary, as in like nothing. Barrel rum stout.
Nothing. Like five like IPAs. Like nothing. Okay. Nothing out of the ordinary. So I couldn't.
Well, I mean, you did volleyball before, so you probably had a lot of sweat come out of your system. So
that's
you got
what I was
less
thinking.
Water, so it probably doubled up on you.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking it was probably the dehydration route. Is what is probably what happened, but it was, man, getting old sucks. I will tell you that much. Like, you just hangovers just sneak up out of nowhere, and it's funny because I texted one of the guys I was with, and he had to go to work the next day, and he said the same exact thing. Absolutely, just like awful feeling, and he, you know, he had the same amount as me. So I don't know. Maybe there's something. Maybe there's a magic potion in the beer. Maybe rum roofied us. I'm not sure.
Now, when you're saying hangover, I think we kind of talked about this before where I debated I never had a hangover because in my definition of hangover, it's just a pounding headache, which I never had from drinking. I've had like a kind of a queasy stomach where I somewhat debate
am I not feeling
well or if I need to eat or something like that, but I never had the pounding headache. So
when I get hungover, it's like a headache in the bottom back of my head usually, and some and this time I happen to be like nauseous too. So it was a double dose. But like I said, I don't know. Probably had something to do with the, you know, dehydration. It's been pretty damn hot here in Jersey too. So I'm gonna chalk it up to that. So then Wednesday we had this fundraiser that we went to that they have in town. It was a kid who died of like cancer like 30 years ago or something like that, and they've been running this fundraiser ever since. And essentially it's like in a field with a big tent, and there's a band and like a bunch of beer trucks, and it's a beefsteak essentially. So I told you guys a couple weeks ago I went to this Oktoberfest thing. Yes, Oktoberfest in June or whatever. And I started getting into this stacking. What are you trying to show me?
I'm trying to get the cat who's over by my die cats there. So I'm trying to listen to your story at the same time wondering if my cat is going to destroy my die cats collection.
Oh, please, cat. Please, cat. One swipe, cat.
Nope. Jumped on the recliner.
All of a sudden, I see the screen moving, and I'm like, what is he trying to show me during this? So I told you a couple weeks ago about this cup stacking thing that we started doing at the Oktoberfest, and it just took over, and the competitor in me just started coming out. So I don't know if you've ever been to a beefsteak, but what happens is they keep bringing out little pieces of beef that are on pieces of bread. And one of the things that happens is the bread, people start to make bread towers, like with all the bread that they don't use, they start to make bread towers. So long story short, out comes the competitive bread tower maker in me.
Yeah, that was my favorite book from The Hobbit, The Bread Towers.
That was the fourth one, right? The fourth one?
I believe so, yeah. I think they got an Academy Award for that.
So, then they announced that they're going to give awards out for these bread towers. So it could be most patriotic. It could have the most flair. It could be the tallest. And I just go into go mode. I'm starting to stack bread. So my method is to try to not even to eat the beef. Was to take the beef off the bread and put the beef on a plate, put all the breads on a tower, and keep sending back trays and have them just keep bringing. And the waitress started getting pissed at me. But meanwhile,
so the waitress is coming over to your request for more beefsteak.
Yes.
As she notices a 3-pound pile of beef on the side.
Essentially. So much so to a point that she was like, you know, when you guys eat a little bit more, I'll bring one out. So what I did, as soon as she turned, I handed it to the guy across from me. I'm like, put the beef on their table. So he turns around and slaps like a plate of beef on the table next to us so we can continue to get more bread pieces to stack.
So you were in beef desperation, is what you're telling.
Yeah,
you were like that kid who got lima beans and tried to throw it in the plant and feed it to the dog.
Essentially.
Stuff like that. Okay.
So we keep stacking ours, and people around us, somehow they're getting higher, and they're getting bigger than ours, and they're putting lights in theirs and flags, and they get ours to a pretty high point, but it starts to get really skinny at the top. So the tower falls like 3 or 4 times, and the table next to us is like, hey, they called cutoff time. You can't keep stacking your tower. And I'm like, come on, yeah, get out of here. And long story short, night goes on, and we did not place in our bread tower competition. So
no,
I'm still a little upset about it. And
well, I mean, the winter beefsteak will be around in 2 years. Maybe you can train for that.
So every 2 years, every 4 years, there's a beefsteak?
Well, every 4 years is a summer beefsteak, but in between we have the winter beefsteak.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So at the end, the only thing I got to do was I filmed the video of me blasting the the bread tower apart in bottle cap challenge motif, I guess, if you will. So then Thursday comes. Thursday's the 4th, and I live by a lake here, or in a lake community, and It is nuts around here on the 4th. There's fireworks going off at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. When it's bright, you just hear... Bah, 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 bah. Like people just are launching things into the air. And we didn't really have any plans, but a couple we became friendly with, they have a boat. They're like, hey, do you want to go on the boat? And I'm like, absolutely. Now, it was pretty damn cool because we're out on the boat most of the day and we're going to like different parties of people we only kind of met, but he knows like everyone at Lake. So we pull up in the boat and like dock and then like walk and like have a beer, get some food at the party and then leave. So basically you're like raiding people's parties and just showing up and we're like party pirates.
You're trying to get the feeling of actually feeling like you were rich.
Exactly.
You know, where you can just pull up in your yacht and go to any party you want.
Yeah, this is probably as close as I'll ever get to that, I gotta say.
Living the dream. Continue.
So the sun goes down, and the cool thing they do around where I live is on the 4th, every lake house has red flares, and they light up the whole lake. Like, so it's like glowing red, which is it's just pretty damn cool. And so we're out on the boat, and there's two fireworks shows going on in two different towns, but where you are in the lake, you could see both of them. So there's fireworks to the left, fireworks to the right. We're in the water. We're drinking beers, we're blasting music. My wife is like dancing on the back of the boat. We're going swimming. It was like a picture perfect 4th of July. So I gotta say, so that was another day of drinking. The next day we had this thing called Fun Friday, which is a little thing down at the clubhouse, if you will. Now the clubhouse sounds exotic. It's basically looks like a abandoned VFW hall. But it's like $2 beers and like $5 burgers over there. So yeah, needless to say, the last 3 days have been kind of a bit of recovery, if you will, trying to just have seltzer here.
Oh, okay.
Which is not fun.
Yeah. So when you kill your liver, seltzer brings it back.
Correct. Correct.
It's kind of like a video game where you find the pork chop in the behind the wall. You just drink it and then your liver comes back magically and then you can fight vampires.
Well, we'll see. I do have which I told you guys about a couple weeks ago, a men's club meeting right after we wrap this up today. I don't know what's going to happen there, if they will be talking about the beer and saving the beer. I also volunteered to pour beer next week at an event, so we'll see what happens here.
You got a strong keg arm there, Scotty?
What was that?
You got a strong keg arm?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I got a legit keg arm. A lot of cross-training for that, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do to stay fit in the beer community.
Do you ever mix it up and use your left hand instead of your solid right?
Well, I'm a lefty, so I'm lefty's my go-to, but, you know, I'm a little bit ambidextrous when it comes to beer pulling.
Oh, okay.
I guess to wrap the weekend up, I took my dog to the ocean, which was
to the ocean.
To the ocean. I never dog's been swimming a bunch of times in lakes and like little streams and stuff, but never took the dog to the ocean. There's a dog beach down in South Jersey, Manasquan area, and I met my cousin and his puppy there, and sure enough, there was about 20, 30 dogs on the beach, and my dog gets there, and he loves it. So he like runs up to the waves, and then he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, wait, what is this? As it was coming, crashing in. He's never seen a wave before, so he's kind of like boxing with the waves. Like, what is this? Moving water. So it was really cool. He really just adapted right to it and started like – he's kind of fat and solid, so he started like being able to like kind of like – body surf himself through the waves, kind of like a pontoon, and he
like a big old buoy.
Yeah. So he was in his glory, man, going back and forth. Now the problem is I have to watch him a little bit because he's got bad hips, and when he exercises hard, he's pretty much out of commission for a day, and I can barely move him, and he limps around. But he's there, and there's this dog there. There's this dog Marty, and Marty's just. Marty is, you can tell, in the relationship of owner and dog, Marty runs the show. Okay. Old man kind of chasing Marty. Hey, Marty, come back. Marty, stop humping the other dog. And he's just going to town on every dog he sees. Oh, Marty.
Beach.
Marty, knock it off. But Marty had this toy, this orange, like, floating stick. It kind of looked like a tube, kind of. And he was just throwing it. And my dog gets so infatuated with this stick. Every time he would throw it to Marty, Marty was a retriever, so faster than my dog in the water, he would get it. And my dog would kind of trail right behind him, trying to get the orange stick out of his mouth each time. So then we're like, Obi, you got to come take a break. Come sit, you know, by the chair. And I'm holding him on his leash, and the whole time, just left to right, just fixated on the orange stick, on the orange stick, crying every time the dog got it and brought it back, going, like crying at the top of his lungs that he could not play with said orange stick. So
this kind of sounds like one of them 80s movies where like the other dog is like the big bully type, or at camp maybe like Meatballs or something like that, and Obi's like our main character who's like trying to be cool and fit in. They're like, you're not ready for dog beach, Obi.
pretty accurate, I guess.
Yeah. Then we'll have a montage of Obi going to the beach, and then he's going to get used to the waves. Instead of running away, he's going to be diving into it, and then there's going to be this big event where it's like, first one who gets the orange stick wins dog beach. And then there's whole montage that are going back and forth, and then just something weird happens, like one of the people invented something that kind of holds up the big dog from getting the stick, and then Obi grabs it, and there's this big race to the shore to see if Obi can hold on to the stick, and then he wins.
All the other dogs are watching.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're all cheering. They're like, we got dog beach back! Ah! And then a Cyndi Lauper song ends the movie as we go to credits.
And Marty's owner is like slipping on shells at the end, and they're both in the, they can't get out of the surf, and everyone's like, come on, Obi, and like, you know, they all kind of take over dog beach.
Marty starts barking a little bit too much. He's on the boardwalk, and then the dog catcher's like, oh, we got a loose dog. And he's like, no, I took my collar off to do the challenge in the water. Oh, be quiet, you. And he puts him in the back, sets up a nice sequel 5 years from now. I'll write it all out.
Wow, I was going to say, do you want to just tell us the sequel, too, while you're at it?
I didn't. No. Hey, we got to bring these people back for episode 254, Scott.
Gotcha.
You're all going to have to wait. Dog Beach 2 is going to be amazing.
So I'll save my next Hangover and Dog Beach stories for 254, guys.
Exactly.
All right, Perlu, we're gonna jump right in here and get to our guest. Now,
I want to waste time, Scott.
We generally waste time for
I want to count tiddlywinks and scratch myself and look around the house, and but if I feel like it, then we'll talk to our guests.
I like that counting tiddlywinks was your first option of things you want to do.
You don't do that on Mondays?
What exactly is a tiddlywink?
I believe that's the stick game.
Yeah.
If you recall, where you get like one black stick and the object is to push away the, grab one of the other sticks or your own stick without moving any other sticks. I forget if it's, you'll get all the same color or if it's just any stick.
Now, my question is the game tiddlywinks, or the actual sticks, are they individual tiddlywinks? Like, if I hold the stick, am I holding a singular tiddlywink?
Yeah, you have a tiddlywink, not winks. Don't pluralize it.
Okay.
You'll look silly.
All right. Well, I'm glad you cleared that up for me.
Well, that's why I show up every week.
You're so knowledgeable. You're so knowledgeable. But let me get to our guest. So my friends over at the Syndicate Entertainment and Marketing Agency reached out to me, and they asked me if – now, I'm probably going to butcher this, okay? But if we wanted to interview guys from the band, okay – Eke Shinnok. It's spelled E-C-C-E-S-H-N-A-K. So we're going to have to definitely get into the meaning. I mean, at least they picked a really easy name to spell and remember. But we're gonna be talking to Davey of the band, and we're going to give him a call. And they just finished up an album, and we'll check him out. Now, Davey, first off, we got to start with the band's name. Okay.
Uh-huh.
It is very very hard to pronounce. We even got the phonetic way of saying the band's name. And let me see if I could, if I don't butcher it. Tell me if I how bad I messed this up. Okay.
Sorry, I'm so sorry. Can you repeat the last moment of what you said a moment ago?
Sure. I said, sure. Let me see how bad I butcher this, and you tell me if I'm even in the ballpark of how to pronounce the name.
I will be profoundly forgiving because the name isn't.
All right. So we even got the phonetic version. Would I pronounce the band Eke Shinnok?
That's really, really close. really, basically perfect.
Okay.
The only thing is that you're being too fastidious with the separation between the SH and the N.
Okay.
It should be continual. Eke Shinnok. One sound.
Schnock.
Eke Schnock.
Okay. Eke Schnock. Eke
Schnock. And you know, there's another way of studying this, which is if you listen to the first record, man, called Letters to Hermann Vasquez Rubio.
Right.
On track 4, there's a band name pronunciation aid.
Ah. We'll have to play it on the podcast afterwards.
Yeah, it's led by the original drummer, Mr. Bill Ritchie, who's now a biologist. doctorate biologist. He's a dear friend and an absolutely phenomenal drummer, and he does a band name pronunciation aid. So if there's any leftover ambiguity, just consult with Bill.
Okay.
I kind of figure he got the job. They just see how he pronounced the name so well that, like, he must be smart if he knew how to say that, and they just gave him the biologist job.
Well, it's funny. Sometimes you stumble upon people that it feels in a corny way like some kinder spirit controlling things put you in place. I first saw Bill, the first drummer in the band, in a practice room playing the shit out of a really fast jazz. And his eyes were closed, and he wasn't doing anything, no snare, no fills, no nothing. But he had his eyes were closed, his head was tilted up a little bit, and he had a little smile. And I said, that guy should be the drummer. And I didn't know his name, and I didn't know anything about him. And then I introduced myself, and he's like, I'd love to play in your band. And it kicked ass. So
explain what does the name mean for people who have no idea. We got a little cheat sheet here, but what does it mean?
Eke Schnock means, hey, look at this. Eke in Latin is the imperative form of behold. And Schnock is a word I came up with when I was in my salad days that means whatever you want it to. So it can be in many parts of speech. Usually it's a noun. This is a schnock. That's a schnock. Hey, how's it going, schnock? I guess that's a proper version of it or something. And then it can be a verb. You can schnock something up. It can be a past participle. Things are schnocked up. You can curse somebody out. Go schnock yourself.
So this could be a schnock cast right now is what you're saying.
That's correct. That's exactly right. You're already using your versatility very well.
So I pick up on vernacular quickly. I'm very talented.
Hey, look at this.
I just want to say that story is way more interesting than you, Scott, stealing the phrase from Super Troopers to come up with the name of this show. I just got to be honest.
Say again?
This show was named after a phrase in the movie Super Troopers, so I just said your band name is 10 stories 10 times more interesting than ours.
That's okay. There's many ways to name, and names are very important, so I would not sell your name short.
Okay, I apologize. Scott, good job.
So where are you guys based out of?
We are New Yorkers. Some of us are in Manhattan, others are in Brooklyn.
Okay. And yeah. So the band's been together for what, over 6 years now. How did you guys get? Did you guys all meet? Did you know each other? Was it word of mouth? Did one of you have the songs and kind of find the band, or you guys all kind of got together and started writing together? How do you guys work?
Hmm.
Oh. Did I lose him?
Did we lose him?
We might have.
Hmm. We got at least we found out the name of the band, so. Great interview, Scott.
That interview got all schnocked up. Yeah, he'll probably call back in a second. But to clear though, we're not really named after the Super Troopers thing. They just happened to use. Oh, here he is. Hey, what's up?
Sorry, we might lose. Sorry about that. I guess I lost you.
Yeah, no problem. Let me just merge. Service. No problem. Let me just merge Mike back in. Okay, we're back. So yeah, the last question I really had was how did you meet, and like, what is your approach to songwriting? Did one of you come up with songs, or are you guys a band that kind of jams it out and figures it out from there? I think we got schnocked again.
Yeah. I told you don't ask them personal questions on this show, Scott.
How dare you ask them how they write music?
What?
Sorry, I can't answer that.
I've never been more insulted in my life. I don't write it. It comes to me.
When I was in band, we are always the get in a room and kind of make a bunch of sounds. When the sounds kind of sounded okay, then we started going. Like, all the bands I played in, barely anyone ever had, like, a song written. So I always wonder what that... Here we go. Hey.
Hello. It might suck a little bit. The reception might be kind of bad. I'll do my best.
Your reception's kind of schnocked up, man.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This reception can go schnock itself.
So again, our question was, where'd you guys meet, and what kind of writers are you?
So, I met the first dudes and lady in Philadelphia, and we had a version of the band that lasted from about 2010 until 2013 or so, and I broke it up to reimagine it. Some things worked really well in that group, other things not as much. But I broke it up and moved it to New York City, and I met some wonderful new players and new dear friends in New York City. But Ecce Schnock is basically music that I compose and I sing, and I hire awesome musicians to play the Sam Dang out of and interpret the Sam Dang, interpret the schnock out of. So it's kind of like, in some ways, there's a Zappa-ish setup there, like composer-performer relationship.
Now, when you got a large amount of people like that, seven members, is it easy to, like, throw out ideas and people agreeing on stuff? Or is there ever a time where you got to go to, like, a vote or anything like that?
Well, my bandmates are extremely both spiritually and intellectually down with the shit. Like, they get it in a really immediate way, and so, you know, even if I, like, oftentimes I kind of know exactly what to tell people what to do, and then other times it's a little bit more unclear to me, especially when, like, I don't know how to create a synth patch, for instance, or a guitar tone or something, mm-hmm. but I can describe the coloristic thing about it or whatever it is. And my bandmates, in addition to being wonderful people, are also just excellent novices and understanders of fucking waveforms and stuff. So the communication process is very fluid, very easy, and very delightful.
So now you guys just you just finished up an album for a July 19th release, correct?
Yeah, that might get kicked down the road, or maybe not. I don't think so.
Okay,
it'll probably be July 19th.
Okay. So as far, you know, you guys have a very interesting sound to begin with where, you know, I've been kind of checking your stuff out over the last week or two. Where, you know, each song is definitely, you know, it doesn't seem like there's one style you guys go for. You definitely hit on a lot of things. So what does this new album bring to listeners? Like, what is there a general sound? What different did you guys do in the studio this time? And can we expect from the new album, which is Metamorphogens?
Perfect pronunciation.
I'm good.
So the,
I'm good.
Metamorphogens is an album about change. And everybody from the Roman poet Ovid to the Buddha to Friedrich Nietzsche to your friend Larry can tell you that change is a necessary, if very painful, if very ecstatic, if very boring part of the world. It's just a part of it. And so the album is, I wouldn't say a concept album in the sense that there's like a, you know, a perfect story with a narrative from song to song, but in general the album is about the subject of change, and especially in this time period, you know, change is as old as the hills, but this time period of Human history is the changiest of the changey times. You got the horrifying climate chaos reality. You have the absurdity of the political crises that we face. There's the changing world in relation to technology. There are changes upon changes upon changes upon changes upon changes. And this is an album that is a kind of grappling with that, a dancing with it, a wrestling with those changes upon changes. Again, with an homage to the Roman poet Ovid, whose great book Metamorphoses is a lot of stories about change. But it's also for the Buddha and for one of my other heroes, Friedrich Nietzsche. So it's all about change, whether it's change of a love affair or the political changes or other kinds. And that can be found in within each song. The style will change suddenly. Hopefully we quote earn the changes. Hopefully they feel natural, even if they're strange and striking. Hopefully they feel natural and earned, but that's for the listener to decide. I guess the audience can expect an experience of the study of changes emotionally, intellectually, musically, and we want to take you into a number of strange places, but we hope you feel that we always are standing by your side, like Virgil and Dante. Maybe you guys are Virgil, maybe we're Dante, vice versa, who knows. Hopefully you always feel like we're by your side.
Interesting. And when you guys go out and do a gig, being a very artistic kind of band, do you concentrate more and get your message out through the lyrics of the songs or the performance on stage?
These are both important and interdependent parts of the music. The lyrics are something I obsess over, maybe to a fault, hopefully not. I like my lyrics. I'm proud of them. I care about them a lot. But the Ecce Schnock live experience is very, very important to understanding the music. Every band is like that, obviously, but some bands you can just simply play the album and understand it and enjoy it in a more immediate way. Maybe Ecce Schnock is, you know, surprising, puzzling, whatever on the recording. Hopefully it's enjoyable. But the live experience is, I think, where the soul, the spirit, the story communicates itself better.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I mean, it's a lot to, you know, it's kind of a lot to take in just description-wise, and it's something that I would imagine you have to sit down and, you know, through multiple listens and whatnot, really kind of get the message of your songs. Now, you guys recorded the album in a living room, is that correct?
Yeah, my dear friend Jeff Lucci was in the Kick-Ass, I guess you would say, like, Break a Zillion Hearts pop rock band, Mo Lauda and the Humble.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually now international touring act. They just scooted across Europe recently, but they have a national touring schedule that carries them throughout the year. Their bassist, Jeff Lucci, is an absolute virtuoso. He's a great bassist. He's a great guitarist. He's a great keyboardist, but he also just has a brilliance when it comes to production and engineering. And again, I guess in the like HR department of the production side, he's a very, very good communicator. He really listens well, both to what I'm saying and to what I'm playing. He can realize musical ideas with his gadgets in a way that I would be up Schnock's Creek if I tried to do. So.
I mean, it's so interesting talking to you and how in depth you envision these, the album and your songs. How long does it take to go from your idea to producing a full song?
Some of them are actually just under a decade old. But it's hard to really answer that question with any kind of simplicity, because it's not like I set out to write them. Like, some of them I wrote just writing them into the wind without the oldest ones I wrote before I had Eke Schnock, and I was just writing songs in my private time for my own sanity or amusement or whatever.
Right.
And so those are the oldest, and they've gone through all kinds of different stages. But if I like really try to crank something out, and if I like stay consistent with it, some of them will be like a month or two of fidgeting and, you know, throwing a bunch of stuff out and then saying, oh, that's cool, that doesn't make any sense, chop that off, redo this, do that, da da da. So it's, I don't know, if I had to like make a magic number, it would maybe 2 months per song. I don't know.
Nice.
But some of them are old as heck.
Right. Well, Davey, I want to thank you for popping on the show and giving us kind of a introduction to the band and your guys' music and the new album that's coming out. If people want to check out your music or your guys, where you'll be touring and whatnot, what's the best place for them to visit?
You can go to ekeschnock.com. ECCESHN as in Nancy, AK, ekeschnock.com, or any of the funny internet websites with the same name. You can also go to the Muse in Brooklyn, the awesome circus arts space / concert venue. We're putting on a concert called Schnockfest. Nice. On July 20th. So if you want to see a kick-ass show with a million kick-ass bands and aerialists and people eating swords and planes and maybe even, who knows, maybe some nudity, you could go to Schnockfest. Also, if you care about the problem of climate chaos, we are donating the profits to Extinction Rebellion, and we're also looking for an organization that relates to immigrant justice, the subject of immigrant justice, to donate the ticket sales to that also.
That's awesome.
So,
sounds great. Yeah. Sounds great, man. So again, good luck with the new album. Good luck with Schnockfest over there, and we want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for including me in your verbal shenanigans, and you guys are great. I send hugs over the airwaves, and thank you to all your listeners.
All right. A very schnocky interview right there, if I don't say.
That is very profound of you to say that, Scotty.
Schnocknificent, if I will. So,
have you looked over some of the names of their songs and all? It's very interesting where it's just like random things. Like their 9.5-minute song called Katie's Wart, or their music video where they have a bear in a basketball uniform called Larry Sleepover Friend.
I think this is the same group that I was put in touch with, Thumpasaurus, and I think those two bands should go out on tour together.
Well, I mean, looking over some of their names, I think I want to help them come up with some song names for their next album, Scott.
You have song names?
Yeah.
Okay.
I came up with a few. I think that they can be very catchy. You know?
All right.
Here's my first suggestion. Diesel-powered catfish.
Diesel-powered catfish. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I think that can work with them.
I think it sounds like a song. All right.
All right. How about History of Egyptian Pogo Sticks?
All right. I could see it. That could have been the secret to the pyramids.
Exactly. You never know. How about I Blow Bubbles for the Devil?
Okay. That could be taken many ways, yes.
Yeah. I kind of see like a 90s alternative female band kind of singing that, but I think they can take that over since it was a blown opportunity.
All right. What else you got?
How about harmonicas cause diarrhea?
It's the truth. I played a harmonica a lot in the 90s, and loose bowels. Yeah. Loose bowels all the time.
How do you think that Blues Travelers guy lost so much weight? Kept playing.
Yeah?
Kept playing. Doggy paddling Cato Kaelin.
Well known that Cato Kaelin was a big fan of the doggy paddle. Never quite got it back after the whole incident, you know. But
What happened?
Oh, nothing. Just OJ went on Twitter. That's all.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He's got a lot of followers, and I wonder why. Must be we love his NFL career.
What happened to Cato Kaelin? And does
Sounds
he want
like
to do
he
an interview?
Three.
All right.
How about Pterodactyl Communist Party?
Very, very threatening party. I hear that. What was the guy that we had on our show with the boot on his head? Jesus Christ!
Vermin Supreme.
Vermin Supreme. I heard he is thinking about running under that party's name. Since I haven't heard his name pop up in the Libertarian Party too much lately.
Yeah. I mean, he's not moving ground there. He can definitely go with the pterodactyls there.
Correct.
How about the Ukrainian king mows my lawn?
Ukrainian king mows my lawn. Okay.
I mean, it's me, so I don't blame him. So
yeah. All right.
Or finally, my last suggestion. Trigonometry orgies occurs on Tuesdays.
Now, did these just come to you, or did you actually kind of just like randomize words here?
Just stuff I made up with. I mean, I just sat back and listened to their vibes, and I said this could work for them.
So, about
our guests.
I think you should email them the list and see if maybe they can construct one of those songs.
I think if they do, they got to perform it live on Verbal Shenanigans.
Although he seemed very deep into the actual meanings of a song, so I'm not sure. What was it? Chemical catfish or diesel powered catfish? I don't know.
Chemical catfish, Scott.
That's
give me some credit.
That's just crazy.
That's
weird. What about Black Mermaid?
Too controversial. Way too controversial. Everybody knows for a fact when sailors die from mermaids, they're all Caucasian mermaids.
Do you like wake up like some days like afraid to almost look on social media and be like, what are we upset about today? What are we
outraged by?
But the problem is, in case you guys have lived under a rock or you're smart and stay away from things like this, which I don't. I always read this crap. People are upset that Disney chose a black actor for the play a mermaid in the Little Mermaid remake. The problem is, I don't think anybody's offended. I think there's a handful of people, as with every controversial issue that gets people up in arms on Facebook saying, how ridiculous, if people are on both sides. I don't think there's actual people that care. I think there's probably like four.
I mean, I can't see at the end of the day. I mean, we've seen this before with like the all-female Ghostbusters, the Black Honeymooners movie. What's going to happen is it's going to come out and the people who were disgruntled going into it say, oh, that was the most horrible thing I ever seen. And everybody who's like the existential liberal will be like, that's the greatest thing ever. And it's such movement. It's so powerful. At the end of the day, it'll probably just be an average freaking movie.
Exactly.
Who knows?
Like, 4 minutes into the movie, you won't notice that she's black. You'll forget that. In the end, the movie's got to be a good movie to do well, right? Like, it's got to, maybe there's going to be people that go out to just see it because it's so controversial, but it's just, it's got to be a good movie to be considered a good movie anyway. Like, what? Every week that goes by, I get closer and closer to just being like, you know what? I'm packing this social media thing up and I'm out of here. I'm just going to promote Verbal Shenanigans from now on. The rest of this is just a waste of time. It really is.
Well, I'm not outraged by the Black Mermaid, but I'm still pissed off there's a Blackula. I can't deny it.
You've been saying that for years.
Dracula is white and Hungarian and played by Bela Lugosi. Though I have African-American friends, I just want to say, I'm sorry, you can't
have Dracula. You can't have
him.
You can't give him to the
ridiculous. I mean, since I've seen white people do it, clearly they can't be a black vampire. I mean, you can have Blade. You can have that.
Okay. So you're giving them Blade, but not Blackula.
I will give you Blade, but don't you dare tell me about Blackula again. I will. I can't say it, Scott.
You heard it here. Berlew is putting the foot down. You guys can't have Blackula.
Absolutely not.
You know, it's just that's what we're offended about. Oh, the other thing the thing today that I see a lot of people arguing about is equal pay for the women who won the World Cup. A lot of people on top of that.
I'm against it. They need to be paid more than the men, as we saw by the Copa Cup.
yeah, the Gold Cup. No.
Gold Cup.
Yeah. Here's the thing that you can argue this all you want, but until they're able to make the money, until they're able to fill the seats every day and there's the pot to pull from, it's not going to change. It comes down to finances. I mean, the men's World Cup is like a bazillion-dollar industry, meaning shares are going to be higher. You know, it's also it's a longer process to qualify. It's almost 2 years, whereas the Women's World Cup is like, I think it's 2 weeks, something like that. So it's like, it'll get there. If they really want to support the women, they need to go out to their league games to get the game relevant, not once every 4 years, but relevant every year. They have to start supporting the season. It's the same thing we see with the NBA, the WNBA. It's just...
Yeah, I think we had this discussion before on the show, but it was a while ago, where it seems like when it comes to female sports, oddly, when they're in college or they're playing like a Women's World Cup where it's non quote unquote professional.
Yep.
We all go out and support them and go, this is the greatest thing on earth. Yep. I mean, people rooted for the Connecticut
Huskies, yep.
Female Huskies, the basketball team. Everybody's on board, stuff like that. The second it goes professional, for some reason, when it comes to team sports, they all disappear.
They do.
They'll support an individual sport, like we all love Serena Williams like crazy, and as some of the female golfers, like who was the one? Was Michelle Wee the one that was facing men at some point?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
times like that, we're like, we love them, but it's just a weird thing where women team sports. Everybody, at least on the U.S. side, disappear. Now, other countries like Russia, China, they're all gung-ho for it. And that's why a lot of the big players go over there, because they actually make more money than they do in the U.S. But
I think it comes down to we are – I think it's wonderful that the women's game has evolved a lot. It's easily watchable. It's fun, especially soccer. You know, the gritty teams, there's other teams that are on close to equal playing ground. Like, there was chances the U.S. could have lost a few games there. So it's getting better and better, but it comes down to it needs time to develop. It's like anything. It's like the MLS. It's like the, you know, it needs time to gain speed. Now, the question is, how do you use this momentum from another World Cup win to build the game more? How do you Now, I know the Women's World Cup does pretty well in the last two. That has done pretty well as far as profit and things like that. And jersey sales, I know U.S. women's jerseys do very well sales-wise. But I think it's just to get them to an equal pay kind of thing is going to be very hard when you talk about the pool of money. It's basically a supply and demand kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it all depends on the situation. I a little bit get the women's WNBA gripe on the sense that they're a partner of the NBA, and the NBA just profits billions upon billions upon billions, where I'm not saying right away they get Michael Jordan, Kawhi Leonard kind of money, but you could at least make
I thought for a second you were saying that the women's league doesn't get Michael Jordan and Kawhi Leonard. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. They probably dominate that league.
Juwanna man.
But, Kawhi Leonard in the WNBA. But
150 points a game.
But the other point on that is that the NBA subsidizes the WNBA. If there was no NBA, there would be no WNBA.
I understand that, but you can also say to a point that they could at least up the pay to the point where they don't have to go in the off season to Russia, to China, to Europe, where they have to combine the two to make a decent living, I guess would be my point. I mean, I've heard interviews with Adam Silver where people asked him, I mean, what's the problem? And he even says, we're still fighting through the situation where where little girls love seeing the names, but they're not coming to the stadiums.
Right.
They're not buying the merchandise of like the individual, or like the Lisa Leslie's and all them.
Yeah.
That's the kind of the gap that we can't figure out right now. And that's why there's a struggle. I do know that I saw that ESPN has signed up for, I think their league is NSWL. That's the women's league here. So they got a TV contract with that. I can't fathom it's so spectacular that all our great stars are going to come back to multi-million dollar contracts in America.
No.
I'm glad it's a star, but I see the point, but I also understand the problem. It's something that still has to be looked at, but
I think it comes down to time. It's just going to take time. And unfortunately, I don't think it's ever going to get there. The only sport, like you touched on tennis, and you got to say MMA. The women have figured out how to be sometimes more relevant than the men. You talk about Amanda Nunes, Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey, Cyborg. Like, they are, people are tuning into them as the main event like it's nothing. Like, it's no different than men's card. It's just as exciting. Some of those women's fights are amazing. You know, it's like,
oh yeah, and you got to sit back and say they busted their rear. It was literally Dana White saying there will never be women in there,
yep.
And then pretty much turn around saying, "Oh yeah, let me show you something." Where he had to turn around and just eat crow on it.
Yeah. And there's a sport that they are evolving faster than you could ever predict. Like, you know, even the fights early, like Ronda Rousey right now wouldn't hold a flame to some of the fighters that are there. Like, and that's like, what, 4 years, three, 4 years that she's gone? Like, that is a quick evolving, you know, where she looked like she was untouchable. All of a sudden you bring in these kickboxers like Shevchenko and Nunez and stuff like that. She wouldn't even, I don't think she would even last very long against some of them.
Yeah, that's why there's been no rumor of her saying, maybe I'll come back for a match in UFC. They always held the door open, kind of like the Brock Lesnar thing. But in the end, there hasn't been a whimper of her saying, yeah, I want to try that again.
Dude, Amanda Nunes is, oh my God, she's an absolute monster. Best of all time, that's for sure. Yeah, I mean, obviously, I hope it happens. I hope women are able to earn their pay and earn the respect and as athletes. But I can't sit here and tell you a solution. And I can tell you the main problem is it just comes down to basic supply and demand. You know, sponsors aren't coming by the zillions to sponsor the women's league. They're not, you know, whereas they're coming by the millions to just get their logo on a NBA player's shoe. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that change happens. I do know that this World Cup is obviously very good for soccer, but where do they go from that now? I don't know.
Yeah. On a side note, I just want to say that Alexi Lawless has had the biggest cop-out in the world. I'm not sure if you heard about this. He said before the U.S.-France game, he said he guaranteed France was going to win, and he said if America wins, he was going to put on a wedding dress and pose in front of the Eiffel Tower.
Oh.
After that happened, he went on Twitter. He's like, we talked it over at Fox, and we know we could do better than just a silly picture. So we're donating money to blah, blah, blah charity. And it's like, hold up.
Alexi.
If you did that picture, one, you could have sold that dress for thousands upon thousands for that. You could have signed pictures of you in that dress and sold it for charity. You could have done that and the charity.
Yeah, you could have simply done, hey,
cop out.
You could have done the picture and said, hey, you know, the picture's not enough. We're going to also donate, you know, money to charity. Alexi Lawless is he's such a clown sometimes, man. I agree with him sometimes, but other times he's just like the Stephen A. Smith. He just says things that,
exactly,
you know, just to get a rise out of.
Fearless and all. It's like, I'm always correct. And the second they're wrong, if it wasn't for this, I would have been 100% correct. Yeah. And it's just like, ugh.
Yeah. So congrats to the women. I enjoyed a couple of the games. I enjoyed the final. I really enjoyed the England game. That was a really intense game. So, I love it. I love watching the team. The men lost in the Gold Cup again. The men have a long way to go. There were some signs of some development, but so basically, essentially, the men now have about 8 months to start figuring it out.
March, they clearly didn't figure out against Mexico, but
March 20th.
We're probably going to be in the same discussion for the next couple years, where it's like, oh look, they almost advanced. Yeah. Look at that.
March 2020, I believe, is the first World Cup qualifier, and that's when things get real. So Greg Berhalter's got about 8 months to really start choosing his squad wisely. So,
I mean, when you have to face Trinidad and Tobago, yeah, I mean, we're only lonely United States. What can we ask?
Please don't bring that up. It hurts so bad. Brother, what do you got? You got something quick before we go here?
Yeah. So, as I said earlier about helping the parents move, as we are going through stuff, I found an old booklet.
Mike B, it says.
Yes. Apparently, there's stories in here that I wrote as part of like fourth or fifth grade.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So
this is a Mike Berlow journal from fourth grade.
Yeah.
This must be...
I don't know the premise of it, if the teacher gave us, like, a structure and we wrote a story or something like that.
Right.
But I think... I'm going to make a bit where I just read one of these stories.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can close us out some days on stories. So, children, if you are listening, please grab a cup of hot milk and put your PJs on and gather around the radio. Think about this. Back in the day, this could have been how this was done. You know, like...
Exactly.
Gather around your stairs. Do people drink warm milk anymore? I don't know.
I can't. I mean, they added to their... coffee, but I don't think on its side.
No, I don't know. All right, so gather around, children. Gather around. If you have kids, bring them around the podcast machine you're listening to here. And Berlo, tell us a story. Yeah. Is there titles for the story or no titles?
Well, you have one to three choices for this week, Scotty.
One to three, okay.
Yeah, your choices are McMillan Island.
McMillan Island, okay.
Yeah. It's Alive.
Ooh.
Or Polar Bear Mania.
This is really tough. I'm going to go with the first one because I have no idea what a McMillan came from. We'll get to the other ones. I do want to hear, too. But for the first ever Berlo Journal, McMillan Island, everybody.
Yes. Once there was a famous explorer named Mac McMillan.
Mac?
He always...
McMillan.
Mac McMillan, okay. M-A-C-K, Mac McMillan. He always traveled around in his ship, the Kitty Hawk. The only things he carried on board was a first aid kit, a rope, flashlight, a whip, and food.
That's exactly what's in your trunk at this. Still, things don't change.
Island one day, so.
A whip.
Scott, please. I'm trying to get into the story.
Oh, I'm not allowed to comment on the story. Okay.
Yeah. No, you're allowed. I'm joking.
Okay.
One day, he was on his ship sailing in the Pacific Ocean where he seen a big piece of land with a lot of trees on it floating around in the middle of the ocean.
I think it's called an island, Berlo.
No, it's a piece of land. Got loose. When he got closer, he didn't see anybody around, so he decided to explore it. He searched for footprints, but he didn't see any. He took his rope and threw it up in the tree and climbed up to see if he, next page, could see anything. There was nothing around. He came to the conclusion that this was unexplored land, so he decided to call it McMillan Island. He wanted to live there, so he went home to get all his stuff, plus some wood and nails to build a house.
He had to get plus some wood. So I guess his stuff, like his whip and stuff, wasn't enough. He was like, all right, now I got to go get the essentials.
Well, that's the travel stuff, but that's a home stuff.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, where was I? He wanted to live. Yeah, we went through that. When he finished his house, he would go out every morning to find another place to explore. He lived happily ever after on his island until he died. And that was McMillan Island, which got me a smiley face.
Ooh, I love it. Seem to be some plot holes in the story.
No, I think that's a blockbuster movie.
Seeing
Tom Hanks as Mac McMillan.
There didn't seem to be any antagonist. He got there, built his house, and then just explored every day and died. No struggle, no nothing.
He's living the life. He's on McMillan Island with his whip and his food and saying, I'm going to explore again.
So once he was done with his house, he just walked around. This is first one. This is one big-ass island.
With nobody on it.
Or a piece of land that's floating with trees on it.
It's one of the stories Izzy started to read out loud, and I said to myself, why did I have him get wood when the whole island is full of trees?
Well, Berlo,
I wasn't the writer that I am today.
Debatable. I don't even know if you could produce something that good today.
Are you challenging me to write MacMillan Island, the movie?
I wasn't, but now I certainly am. MacMillan Island 2 in the works, Berlo? MacMillan Island 2.
When I get the Academy Award, I'm going to be like, this is all you, Scotty. Are you happy?
Well, Berlo, tremendous story. And I think our listeners will leave feeling like they, too, can accomplish things in their life. They, too, can explore, have a sense of adventure, and just learn the art of writing, the composition of writing from a true professional. Keep that journal handy, because I'm sure we will be coming back to that to hear more tales from Mike Berlo.
Fifth grade writer.
It's that time, Berlo. It's time to get out of here. You got anything to promote before we go?
Yeah, I will promote Team Octopus. That's a training center, fitness, kickboxing, jiu-jitsu, martial arts. Oh,
I thought that was the name of your next book, your next story.
No. That's in MacMillan Island 2, Team Octopus.
Spoiler alert.
But they have a wonderful training centers throughout southern Georgia. Our own trainer, Devontae Sewell, will be a part of an LFA fight this coming, it'll actually occur after this episode airs. So we'll keep you posted on that. But they have wonderful trainers. Izzy's been training really hard there, has lost a lot of weight, gained muscle. She's so happy that she joined in there. They're great trainers, great people to go there. So look on Facebook for Team Octopus and find your local training center in the Georgia area.
All right. And I'm going to promote friends of ours from the podcast. We actually did a comedy show there, the Cat Convention, Catsbury Park Cat Convention, which is a run by a cafe that actually helps donate. You can actually rescue cats. I did.
Was anybody wearing a hockey mask?
No, I don't think so. But we did their Catsbury Park Comedy Festival a couple months ago, and they are announcing that they are expanding the Catsbury Park Cat Convention now to Philadelphia. So ooh, they're expanding their terrain, and they're going to be there October 27, 2019. They do a lot of good things for animals and cats and get cats rescued and things like that. And they have bands and different shows. And I think Will Armas was there last time. So just Fred Armas. That's his name. Will Armas. I don't know. Fred Armas was there last time. And they were good guys over there. So that's the Catsbury Park Cat Convention over there. So, guys, that's it for us. Check us out on any podcast platform or internet radio at Discover County Network or comingrightup.org. We love when you guys leave reviews or share the podcast or go back into our catalog and check out a couple of our very fun guests that we treasure them. They're like our little children here. But life is funny, guys. Laugh at it. Keep doing it. You're back. Bye-bye. Schnock it up.
Later.